This is Billionaire Brown, as well as Charles Rivers, and Charles is going to be with us in just a second. We have a great guest. It's a woman, and the title of this show today is going to be A Woman of the 21st Century. We're here with author, speaker, Gabriella. Can you say your last name for everybody, Gabriella? I don't want to mess it up.
Okay, it's Gabriella Guglielminotti Trivel.
All right, and you're calling out. Well, you're tuning in from where in the world? Let everybody know where in the world you are right now.
I live in UK, and I've been living in UK for over 18 years, and I live in Berkhamsted, which is a little town in Hertfordshire, which is the a county northwest of London.
Ah, nice, very very nice. All right, so. How we typically start our show off is with a question of the day, and I just want to get this question out, and then we'll tell them a little bit about you, and you know, then we'll start to get into your message. So the question that we have for you today as our guest is, what do you want to do before you die? Do you have anything that you want to do before you die?
Well, it's a difficult question. I have many things, but there isn't one that particularly comes to mind right now, to be totally honest. And I think it's a bit, because life is so it's so unpredictable.
There's got to be something. Tell us something. What do you want to do before you die?
Okay, if it's a place I would like to go, I wanted to go for a very long time to the Galapagos Island.
Ah, the Galapagos Island. Where is that at?
It's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and off the coast of Southern America. Yeah, I think it's the fact of they are quite of, they have almost prehistorical fauna. So you can see the giant tortoises, the iguanas, and they should be still a bit prehistoric.
Ah, very nice, very nice. I'm definitely going to Google that. I might put that on my things to do before I die as well.
Oh, come on, don't tell me you don't know the Galapagos Island.
No, I don't know the Galapagos Island. Maybe my partner Charles does, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah.
And but it sounds fun. Your whole face lit up when you started talking about it.
Well, Charles Darwin, well, I don't know if you have heard of him either.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the, 19th century English philosopher, scientist who actually put forward the theory of, the Winian theory of the evolution of species. He stopped there. And possibly, I can't remember exactly if it was there that he started conceiving the theory, because he realized that such a remote place, you know, could, in such a place, it could be the right environment for such strange species to remain and to evolve and to survive. So, there are many places I would like to go, but possibly, if you really ask me, like now, totally unexpected, that would be a place. But I was saying that life is unpredictable, because I didn't plan to go to Antarctica, and I ended up there, so.
And you know what, that's actually one of the places that's on my bucket list, actually, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that in just a moment. However, one of the things that I want to do before I die is I want to do skydiving. I don't know, have you ever been skydiving before?
No, I've done different things like walking on fire.
With Tony Robbins or just?
Also with him, but other people too. And I broke an arrow with my throat, stuff like that. I jumped off a bridge tied up to a rope. I done crazy stuff, but
jumping off the bridge with a rope?
Yeah. But skydiving is something that jumping with a parachute. I mean, I think it would really test me a bit. I mean, so far I postponed it, okay?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's something that I, you know, that's something that I've always been scared of doing and that I've been fearful of. And, you know, I guess it was about maybe 3 or 4 years ago I made the decision, like, the next time I get an opportunity to do it, that's exactly what I'm going to do just because I'm scared to do it. So that's really cool that you actually walked on fire and, you know, you did all those other things. So you're a risk taker. You like to
be yeah, absolutely. I'm an adventurer.
I see. All right, so there he goes. Hey, what's up, Charles?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Good. Gabriella, this is Charles.
Oh, hi, Charles. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Gabriella. How are you doing?
I'm good. And you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Please excuse my tardiness.
Okay.
Hey, Charles. I hate to break up this interview like this, man, but for one, I got to tell Gabriella, Charles really, really has a great deal of respect for Tony Robbins. So, Charles, we're just talking about the one thing that we must do before we die, right? And she's, Gabriella, she's adventurous, right? She likes to take risks. She's walked on fire several times. She's walked on fire with Tony Robbins. She's did it other times. She jumped off of a freaking bridge. She jumped off of a bridge tied with the roof.
The bungee jumping.
But she said she's scared to skydive. But she did all those other risky things.
I think skydiving is one of those things where if something goes wrong, it's there's a good chance that it's okay.
Wait, but she jumped off a bridge. She jumped off of a bridge.
Yeah, but you see, there's something though. If you jump, I was tied up to a rope, and of course, you know, I mean, your rational mind understands nothing can go wrong, but still it's difficult to jump, okay? But when you jump, free diving in the void, and you have to be conscious, you can't just go unconscious, because you have to know how to open the parachute and do it, and hopefully it will open up. It's a bit different.
That is super awesome. And Charles, you actually came in at a great time. I know you typically, you know, get us started, but you just, as soon as I just wrapped up saying what I, you know, wanted to do before I die, you just popped in. So I don't know if you, I know you're really excited to have Gabriella here as our guest today. I don't know if you wanted to say anything in particular, or if you wanted to jump in on the question, or if you just wanted to get this thing started. But we're ready, we're hot, we're fired up, and we know that she's an adventurous lady so far.
Awesome. Well, let's do it. Gabriella, thanks again for coming on to Inner Success TV. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us. And so I'm assuming that the question of the day, Demetrius, is what's one thing we would want to do before we die?
Yeah.
You don't know what I answered.
Okay. Well, Charles knows. I told her I don't know where it's at, but I told her you would definitely know. So tell them where you want to go.
Well, it took me by surprise, so I had to do a bit of thinking. But one of the things I wanted for a long time, since I was little, as a place to go that I would really like to see is the Galapagos Island.
You know where that's at, Charles?
I have no idea.
I can't believe it!
You don't know!
I can't believe it! Neither of you know!
I have no idea.
Well, let me enlighten you then. It's a little bunch of little islands in the middle of the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Southern America. And it's one of the stops where Charles Darwin, the British 19th century scientist, philosopher, the one who put forward the theory of evolution, right, of the species, is one of the stops he stopped at, basically, with his on his trip around the world, basically. And, it's a place, a strange place, where it should be, I assume, still pretty pristine, and you can see strange animals like humongous tortoises and iguanas, and I don't know, I think there are also different species of birds and stuff, but For me, what attracts me are the big tortoises.
Okay. Alright. So Demetrius, so what was yours? Did you already answer it yet, or no?
Yeah, mine was the skydiving, which she said she...
Oh, the skydiving.
She said she doesn't know about that, but she would do all those other things. So. Yeah, mine was skydiving.
So I'm in the same boat as Gabrielle. Like, I would do skydiving, but it's definitely not on my bucket list. If a bunch of friends got together and said, "Hey, let's go skydiving," I would do it. But you won't find me taking an initiative on that idea. Not a chance. But one of the things that I would want to do before I die, a place I would want to go, is actually Bora Bora. I don't know if you guys have seen pictures of Bora Bora. If you met a Bora Bora,
No.
But Bora Bora, yeah, I love Bora Bora. Have you seen pictures of Bora Bora?
No.
And they have huts. It's like they have huts on top of like this nice, it's just like a nice bed of water. And when you walk into the hut, you look to the floor, you can actually see the ocean. So the floor is, part of the floor is made of glass, and you can look down, you can see the ocean, and the water is crystal clear. And it looks amazing, so beautiful. So Bora Bora, and I heard they're pretty expensive, so that's why it's on my bucket list. I think it's anywhere from like $5,000 to $10,000 a night, I believe. Or something like that.
Yeah. Nice.
So. Yes. So. All right. So, Gabriella, one of the things that we always like to do before we get into the interview is know a little bit more about our guests, about their background, and their journey. One of the things that we're highly interested in is how you ended up on this path that you're on right now.
Mm. Okay, I try to make it short. Really interesting. I was born in Italy, and I always been a bit of a Robin Hood, meaning feeling not at ease with the status quo or society or the way people live, etc. So I rebelled to religion. I was raised as a Catholic. And then I ended up, because of work, I was studying languages, so I ended up being an interpreter in an international microbiotic institute in Switzerland. And then, so there I came across macrobiotics, which is a way of eating, but also a way of living, and also different things like oriental diagnosis, shiatsu massage, and other things along those lines. So that it was for me the opening, my jump into the so-called personal world. So I started exploring all this weird stuff that for me was very interesting. And so in a way I changed way of eating, I changed the way of looking at things according to yin yang principle, and that little by little, you know, you go to a talk, you go to a workshop, studying books, etc. That was the beginning, and it was my early 20s. When I finished my study, I studied languages. I speak French, of course, Italian being my mother tongue, English and German, and I also studied a couple of years Arabic. And then I ended up, while I was studying, being a tour leader, escorting groups abroad. And that really helped me to broaden my horizons, so to speak. And one of the things that happened was that along those various trips, I met a British guy, so I ended up moving to UK in London and living there. And so I lived in London for 11 and a half years, but then... Yes, I married the British guy, but then I divorced, and I'm still in UK. But I moved to the countryside, and in 2010, I started learning to fly gliders, which are planes without an engine. I don't know if you know. And I haven't finished my license, unfortunately, because of lack of funds. But anyway, at the same time, I also discovered my life goal in 2009, which is actually empowering women. And the reason why I ended up with this awareness in myself about what I want to do in life, or as a grown-up, if we ever grow up anyway, it was because I am going through a stressful period of my life, such as being made redundant at work and going through divorce and so, and also losing my social background because it was both linked to my marriage and my social and my working life. I of course I was quite stressed, and my period, my menstruation started being erratic, and I knew, having for obvious reason been in alternative medicine for a while, I knew that normal medicine wouldn't have possibly satisfied my curiosity or my need to understand more about my body. And so I kind of expressed a desire to find out more about menstruation and what it in the meaning for a woman, etc. And but I left it. I just kind of expressed this desire to whatever is out there. And then a few years later, I came across a lady called Alexandra Pope, who's a British psychotherapist, and she has developed a body of work about menstruation and feminine consciousness. And so I came across her, and so I kind of, through going to a workshop of hers, I realized that how much, in a way, I missed out because I didn't know about this. Even if I'm a woman, nobody handed me over any information. And so I realized that I could have developed and unfolded as a very different woman if somebody had explained me these things, simple stuff, when I was little. And so I decided that it was a good cause, or a cause good enough to be able to follow through, and so to avoid other women maybe being in my seat in the future, to do something to spread the message and to educate women to the beauty of their body, and especially around the subject like menstruation, which is in many areas and many parts of the world, still today, is a taboo subject. And especially for men as well. Not many of them know much about it.
No, we don't. you said a lot of stuff in there, and so I'm going to ask probably a couple of, I have two questions. The first question is, I think in the beginning you mentioned something about the yin-yang principle, if I'm not mistaken, something like yin-yang principle. Can you talk a little bit about the yin-yang principle? And secondarily, is from a... Okay. You froze out there, Charles. Say it again, please.
I did.
Which part was
the second one? We got the yin-yang principle. What was the second question you had for?
The second one was, is menstruation, I guess, considered in some Eastern cultures and areas, is it menstruation considered a spiritual happening within the body?
Okay, right. Let's start with the yin and yang principle, which is often summarized with the image of a circle, which is half black and half white, with a dot of the other color in it. And it's basically the basic principle upon which the whole Eastern philosophy, diagnosis, medicine, and everything in the Orient and the Far East is based on. And it's very simple. It basically explains how the universe works, or in this dimension, material dimension, and definitely in this planet, on this planet. That yin is the force that is comparable to the feminine force, or the dark side, or the cold, or the night, and the yang principle is what is comparable to the masculine yang force, you know, the strength, the day, the light. So the two opposite, basically, which are complementary. And out of those two opposites, everything comes from. So you can, according to the yin-yang principles, you can, for instance, classify foods, and according to if they're yang or more yang, or less yin or more yin, you can, you know, see to find a way to eat, to have a balanced diet. By the same principle, for instance, in the alternative medicine, which is comes from the Far East, you have generally meridians, right? They run through the body, and you have meridians which are yin and meridians which are yang. And the yin yang principle is you find it in everything. You can, you know, you as a character, you can have qualities that are yin, more feminine, and others that are yang, more masculine. Considering also that a woman will be more yin because it's feminine, but also has a masculine inside, and vice versa. Men have also a feminine side, so they have yin inside them. Have I explained it enough?
Yes, yeah, you definitely have. So that's sort of like the how men are more left brain, women are more right brain, but we still have a combination of the two.
Yeah, exactly. So, in a way, what I teach about the menstrual cycle, about menstruation, is actually the same principle. It's very well demonstrated or expressed in menstruation. And if you want, I can explain it quite quickly, so maybe you and the audience can understand. Not lots of us know, but I didn't know either until a few years ago. A woman, when menstruates during the month, that period of a month, let's suppose it's 28 days, just out of simplicity, 4 weeks. In those 4 weeks, she goes into four different seasons. And when I say season, is I compare it to the four phases of menstruation, of the menstrual cycle. I compare it to the four seasons of the year, because everybody knows what spring, summer, autumn, and winter feels like. So, just to make it clear, the first week when a woman stops bleeding, so the first week is the pre-ovulatory phase, is comparable to spring. So a woman goes into an energy and a way of being and a way of acting, which is very much like spring. Then the second week, which is the ovulatory phase, which is the week when she ovulates, is comparable to summer. So she behaves and she feels an energy inside very similar to summer, so very spending, okay? The third week, which is pre-menstrual week, which is the week before she starts to bleed, is comparable to autumn, you would call it in the States, fall, okay? So it's an energy which starts being cooler, you know, more reserved, like in autumn you start feeling the chill in the air, etc. And then the fourth week is comparable to winter, and is the week when a woman menstruates. And it's a week when a woman tends to feel much more, you know, indoors, in all senses. So she needs to rest more, she is more to herself rather than for the world. And so knowing that a woman goes through these four different seasons, we can also understand that the first two seasons, spring and summer, are more young, so more male or masculine energy, so to speak. So a woman is much more expansive, more outward, more social, more active. And then in the last 2 weeks, during the autumn and the winter, she is much more feminine, so more tranquil, calmer, and more interested herself, in herself, in her things, and so not much, you know, up to looking at the world, taking care of the world, etc. More taking care of herself. So you can see that nature, in a way, designed a woman in a way that she can be quite balanced if she is aware of it and she honors all the different seasons.
Now, at what age do you think that girls or young females should start being aware of this?
Well, if the mother were a totally empowered, what I call totally empowered, meaning aware woman in the female consciousness, so it means that she would be an example, a living example of that. So the girls, the daughters, would by osmosis feel it and experience it even before being introduced to anything of this, you know, in a practical or mental way, right? Because they would just unconsciously know. That is my answer. But yes, at a certain, maybe few years or towards the age when, you know, they reach puberty, I think it would be very good for a mother to have a good conversation with the daughters. But by then, they should almost kind of discovering this as a natural thing and find it very simple. Because in fact, it's very simple. it's just the fact that through years, thousands of years of patriarchy, you know, women have been repressed and their body has been objectified. And well, we all know what the lovely history of our times has been.
Yeah, that's really good. So, you know, it's really not a specific age where we should start teaching the little women, little girls of the world about this. It sounds like you said it should be more of like a living example. Like, it should just come naturally just through a mother connecting or a father connecting with his daughter. So that's really cool. Now, you mentioned Alexandria Pope a little bit earlier and how you found her.
No, not Alexandria. That's a city. Alexandra.
Oh, Alexandra Pope. Is Alexandra Pope?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, my apologies. Alexandra Pope, you mentioned a little bit about her. My second question was, typically when, you know, people set their lives out to empower other people, whether it be men, women, or both, they either were empowered by someone specific and they just poured good things into them their entire life, or what I found is some people who set out their life to empower others, they didn't have any empowerment around them. So I'm curious to know, what is, like, is there one specific person that really empowered you to set out this type of life, or did it just come organically, like out of nowhere?
That's a very good question. I think there are many factors that combined to take me to the point where I realized that that's what I wanted to do. I think in my experience, I didn't have a good relationship with my mother, meaning or the relationship I would have loved to have, of a very good relationship that evolves through the years, you know, and your mother becomes your role model, so there's a good communication going, etc. I didn't experience that. So I think that lack, you know, that thing missing, obviously made me prone to be quite sensitive on the subject. Also, I have to say, I wasn't taught anything like this. But intuitively, I assume, when I started menstruating, I started tracking right down my cycles, even if nobody told me anything about it or the importance of it. So when I came across Alexandra Pope and I went to her workshop called The Wisdom of Menstruation, I think, you know, to find in front of myself an older woman explaining to me the four seasons and the impact they have on a woman's life and all the implication of it, etc., and the fact the importance of tracking your cycle, which means just following it, being aware which day you are in and noticing your changes, inner changes, outer changes, how is your life evolving, etc., all made sense. So in a way, I think, yes, that moment in time when I met her, I decided to go to her workshop, it was pivotal. But it was possibly everything before in my life made me ripe enough for the apple to fall from the tree. So I think that happens to everybody really in different ways. It depends what is everybody's path or journey or call it whatever. I think also to explain it, I think I felt the need to empower myself, and I found this knowledge very simple but very powerful. It really impacted me. And I give you an example. In those 30 years or more, one more or less, whatever, I spent lots of money in different training, and I attended many seminars and talks and all sorts of stuff. And I have to say that the majority of all these trainers, as good as they were all mainly men. And nothing wrong with men, I have nothing against men, I love men, but they do operate in a different way. And it was only that day when I went to the workshop with Alessandro Pell, I realized, hang on a minute, now how come the majority are men? So how can I trained in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, for instance, okay, and I think it's a fantastic tool. But again, it was kind of created by men, and so I'm very aware that the way we think as women is different. Now I also know that there is also a huge difference caused by the way our body operates. So I realized, oh my God, but then maybe it makes sense that if a woman as such is run by her body for such a long period of time, because give it or take it, you know, a woman menstruates roughly 30, 35 years in her life, 40 maybe. And so it's a long time, it's a huge chunk of her life. And also the thing is, before, when she's a girl, and after menopause, when she stops menstruating, it's still, she follows a way, a modus operandi, you know, is a Latin word for a way of dealing with everything and functioning different from men. So again, vive la différence, you know, it's just good that we are made different, so we operate differently, so we are compatible and complementary.
Nice. To piggyback off of that, as far as there's an obvious differences between men and women, but do you also believe that there's differences between different races, between a black person and a Caucasian, or an Asian and a Mexican? And I'm asking that because as a guy that I listen to, and I don't agree with all of his philosophy, because some of it is pretty radical, Dr. Sabi. He was an herbalist who lived in Honduras, and his philosophy was that there is certain foods that are biochemically structured to be assimilated by Caucasians' digestive system, whereas that same type of food won't work, or it's not designed for digesting in, say, like a Mexican or African American. So are there differences down to that level that you believe as far as biochemically, where just different foods affect different races?
Well, I don't know, to be honest, but it comes to mind, because of what you are saying, I think that there might be differences, of course. If we look different, it's because obviously inside we are different and we operate maybe differently. But that doesn't mean that this is better or worse or good or bad. It's just that, I would mention macrobiotics again, because it was a very fundamental thing for me to discover macrobiotics, because it really teaches you, there isn't a rule. It doesn't say to you, oh look, you can eat this but not that. No, it just explains how food have an effect, an effect on you as a person, according if there are more yang foods or more yin foods, right? And also, it explains that in certain latitudes on the planet, certain foods grow, and at certain latitudes they don't. So, as a consequence, in, for instance, in tropical weather, where it's hot, the weather is more yang, you tend to have more yin products, more yin fruits, for instance, and fruits and vegetables, okay? So this is how perfect nature is, right? According to where you live, it supplies to you gratis, free. It's all designed for us in a way, you know? Stuff that will help your body to feel okay, be functional in that weather. So, of course, it's not advisable if you live maybe like here, it's quite cold in UK, to eat every day pineapple. Why? Because pineapple don't grow here. So, now of course you can find a pineapple in any supermarket around the corner. And they're very cheap, but to be honest, it doesn't make much sense.
Okay. And then my second question is, earlier you had mentioned that you didn't have a good relationship with your mother, you know, growing up. Mm. My situation was kind of similar. I didn't even know my father. He left when I was 3, and I didn't meet him again until I was 16. And even now, you know, our communication is scarce. You know, we make texts, you know, every 3 or 4 months, and that's just like 1 or 2 text messages back and forth. Does that, because one of the things that we like to talk about on this show is legacy, and, you know, leaving a legacy, not only for our family, but the impact that we want to have in the world. So, if a person who's growing up without a mother, a relationship with their mother, or without a relationship with their father, those are some very important relationships that, if they're not addressed or not healed, that could have some type of psychological effect, in my opinion. And I'm being transparent, and I'm 33, and, you know, me not having a relationship with my biological father, although unconsciously I may feel that it doesn't affect me, but I know on an unconscious level that it does. So for people that are in my particular situation, how would you address those people in healing those type of relationships?
It's a very, very deep question. Thank you for that. And it gives me the opportunity to talk a bit about what I think is so important about women. You know, as women, we give life, give birth, and, well, okay, we are designed that way, and of course, we carry in our womb the new baby, and then it's not just that we gestate for 9 months, but then we give birth to it, being a he or her, and then obviously the mother is more involved in the raising the child, etc. So there is more a kind of a biological, physical connection between the two. So it's very important. Yes, if there is a kind of a wound there, because, you know, you might have not know your mother, might have been given to adoption, or, you know, there are all sorts of situations. Of course, anybody in that situation would suffer from it. And yes, you're right. I believe as well, as you said, that maybe not consciously, but unconsciously, we are affected by something so important. But what I would like also to say is, even more so, it's so important the fact that there is this good link, bond, or communication, relationship, rapport between the mother and the daughter. Because what has been happening for a long, long time, maybe result of patriarchy as well, but again, I don't want to talk in terms that might be misinterpreted. Like, oh, patriarchy is bad, men are bad, women are good. No, I'm not talking in these terms at all. But it's a fact, there are many people talking about, you know, the wound, the mother-daughter wound, which is actually something that perpetuates, is a legacy, unfortunately negative, from generation to generation. And what I would really like to do, be able to contribute with my work, is of educating women, is that to make them realize that the moment you give yourself permission to get to know your inner self deeply, that comes, of course, is connected to your body, and menstruation is a big part in a woman's life. It really helps you to own your shadow. And what's the shadow? It's all those parts that, as you were mentioning about your life, it could be maybe not knowing your father, or for a girl, maybe not having a good relationship with the mother, or having to maybe having withstood abuse of any sorts of thing. So all those parts that they are not particularly pleasant, they come and they form what we can call our shadow or our dark side. And funnily enough, these parts, they tend to come up in women's life during the menstrual, during the month, in the premenstrual week. And so we have all these cases of women who are premenstrual, and there are all these jokes about, oh yes, you are premenstrual, you know, you got the whatever. There are different ways of derogatory way to talk about this in different cultures. But mainly, you know, women being snappy, crabby, you know, and seen by men as the devil and all the rest of it. And then the devil, real, the blood comes, so that's even worse, and etc., etc. So it's all connected. And basically, the more we expand our consciousness and we accept what our body is offering us or bring us for us to look at, and the more chances we have to heal our wounds. And the wounds can be not necessarily physical. They can be emotional and psychological. And those wounds are the deepest one, and they are the one that you don't see as a scar, but they're present. So if a girl is raised by a mother who is empowered, and by empowered I mean conscious, aware of how she operates as a woman, it automatically the little girl will grow up and flourish in a very natural way, and she will blossom simply because she won't feel stressed to prove herself, for instance. Why? Because she implicitly knows of her worth. And obviously, yes, that happens in a loving environment, but we know not all of us had the privilege to be born and lived and raised in a loving environment, but we can do something all together as whole. We can all contribute to improve this and to change it. So my way is to educate women about menstruation, and I hope I can heal that pain, because as women we are designed to experience bliss, not pain.
All right, which takes us, I have a question. Do y'all hear an echo?
I do, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
How about now?
No, it's gone.
Okay. All right, thanks, Charles. All right, so Charles actually had a great question. That last question was really good, because we really do like to talk about legacy. We like to talk about the children and educating our children, right? And I don't have a daughter yet. However, I would love to ask this question, because if I ever do have a daughter, I can go back and I can play this part of your answer. All right, so Gabriella, here's my question. You've spoken passionately in this interview so far about how important it was for you to track your cycle system. You also talked about there was a little bit of a connection with Alexandra Pope. Now, I don't know what that connection is, but my real question is, tracking your cycle system seems a little bit easy the way that you said it. Mm-hmm. And it also, on the other hand, it doesn't seem like every woman does track their cycle system. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is in your book or in one of your workbooks or anything like that, but is there a track, like, did you have a specific track, like a cycle system, like that you were using to track it, or were you just using a notepad and a piece of paper to track it?
Yeah, okay. It's a very good question, and I can very easily explain it. I mean, the word tracking the cycle can sound very, what is that? It's very simple. When I wasn't aware of all this stuff, I was simply writing down in my diary. I have a little booklet that I still have that I started when I started, you know, so over 30 years ago. And I was just writing the beginning of a cycle, so I would know how long it would be. But and that was it. But that it just came spontaneously by somebody in my body. Okay, I wasn't taught anything like that. But when I went to Alessandra Pope workshop, you know, what I understood getting to be to know what the season are and the impact of them in me as a person, I realized a whole different level of awareness. Okay, so since then, since 2009, I started tracking my cycle, not just with the dates, but I every day, quite simply. It doesn't have to be so long or anything complicated. At the end of my day, I just reflect for a minute or two, and I think of my day and how it's been and what I've experienced is inside. You know, was it a day that I felt calm, I felt maybe happy, or I felt nervous, I felt worried, etc. And by doing that, a woman, what discovers for herself is a certain pattern, because we are all different. So yes, as a general explanation, I can say, hey woman, look, you go through four seasons every month. But it's also true that we are different. We might have physical problems that might make us our cycle longer or shorter. And also very important is that until you experience for yourself, nothing has meaning. Because we are all with the question, what's in it for me? So, especially with a young woman, it's very important that she really starts looking inside and see for herself, is this true? Because otherwise it's just an academic talk, right? So it's very important that as a woman, she starts realizing, experiencing, experimenting, okay? And see, is my cycle really in four seasons? Do I go through these different stages or not? And why? And what happens to me? What are the implications? What do I feel like doing in those four different weeks? The menstruation is one of the most stress-sensitive system in a woman's body. So it means that if a woman, for instance, is stressed physically, is worried psychologically, you know, the cycle might stop or might become longer. There can be all sorts of variations. So it's a very good, it's so important to do this for a woman because it's like kind of a way to really get in touch on a daily basis with her health. Because bottom line, we are our best doctors, right? Because nobody knows us as good as us. And so, you know, self-knowledge is power. It's written in different cultures, in different latitudes, in parts of the world where there are temples. They tend to have the same line, know thyself, okay? Get to know yourself, who you are, right? And self-knowledge is very powerful stuff. And also because, you see, then you realize that there's no guru out there. So you are your own guru. And that's, again, simplicity, but it's very powerful.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And that makes a whole lot of sense. And I also liked how, you know, you explained where, you know, you... tracking yourself for women, you know, and girls, that was really good. I didn't ask you that question, but you did throw it in like, hey, you may figure out like, all right, well, maybe it was a little bit longer because I was stressed physically or I was stressed mentally. right? And if you're tracking it, if these girls are tracking it, then they can go back last month or 3 months ago and say, oh, wow, my cycle was a little bit shorter when I was eating right or when I was doing this, or wow, my cycle seems to be longer, and, you know, vice versa. So I do appreciate that. You also told us the reason why we should, well, why they should track their cycle system. Now,
but also, can I just add something very important? Sure. The other thing, very important for a woman, is that by doing this, she becomes very aware of when she is ovulating, so she can be pregnant, fall pregnant, right? So this is fundamental. Why? Because for a woman, this is powerful. You don't need a bloody pill. You don't need some synthetic hormones, you know, to go into, be digested by you and go into your body and fuck it all up, right? Just, you know, following your cycle every month, you get to know yourself. You get to know when you ovulate. So, come on. I mean, that's one of the major issues for all women under the sun for the best part of 3 decades or so, you know, because, and especially if, so it means being free from, you know, the pharmaceuticals, having direct links with your health. And then especially emotionally, is very important because it makes your own person, you are much less reliable on men's judgment, ideas, and whatever they want to make you think or like or dislike. And this is so fundamental. This is, of course, is fundamental for men too. I don't want to ostracize men, please. Okay, women have been the weakest link for a long, long time, so maybe it's time to give something back to them.
All right, so here's my last question, Gabriella, and then we'll pass it over to Charles. All right, you have that, let me see that article you had. We were talking about your vision.
Yes.
A little bit earlier about the Antarctic. Is there a connection with your vision in included in that?
No, well,
show us that article and tell me a little bit about that.
No, well, this is not an article. It's actually, it's more like kind of, it's not a poem. It's just something that I kind of downloaded it.
That wasn't it then. Show me your book.
My book. Yes, my book is Antarctic Odyssey.
Ah, there it is. There it is. Tell us a little bit about your book here. What's inside?
Okay, well, that's the story of, I ended up, I finished my divorce. That was quite long and not very nice, but they never are. Okay. And 2 or 3 days later, after my second court hearing, when everything was decided and finished and the healing process started for me, I came across this chap called Peter Bland, who is Australian, and he was talking at an event in London, and he was advertising this his trip. He was taking people to go to Antarctica with him. He had previously been himself to the North and South Pole, and he had been taking people for some time to Antarctica because Antarctica changes lives. And so the purpose of going there was to face fears and limiting beliefs. And so you can imagine the distraught, divorced Gabriella, who had lost herself, who didn't know herself anymore, and blah, blah, blah. Who had just trained a year earlier into NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, which is all about the mind. Anthony Robbins is one of the example of of NLP, basically. So you can imagine the appeal for me. So I went there and I checked it out and I had a good chat with him. And I thought, I have to go. Because I don't want to find myself on my deathbed and think I missed that opportunity. So I sent up, and 9 months later I find myself taking a flight going down to Ushuaia, which is the most southern tip of Argentina, and where all all ships set off for Antarctica. And so I went with this group of people to the Antarctic Peninsula with Peter Blaine. And in the book, I didn't want to write a book, but on the way, something very unexpected happened to me, and I lost my photographic gear, and so I couldn't take pictures and film as I wanted, so I couldn't really produce a documentary. And so 3 years later, I realized that maybe I could write a book, and so I ended up writing this book in 2 weeks, and I published in 2012. And so what is in the book? Well, it's the raw, uncensored, tale of what happened to me going there. But it's not so much, the story of, the trip there and all the animals and stuff like that. Yes, okay, I tell about kayaking and camping on the ice overnight and stuff like that. But mainly I tell all the things that nobody wants to tell anybody, because one might think is stupid, is weak, is whatever you might, and instead I really tell the story as it is, all my panic attacks, all my anguish, all my thoughts, all my hell. So it's an inner journey, really.
Nice. Well, Gabriella, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story. So your book is sort of like a biography or autobiography.
Well, it's not, because it's just in a way the tale, the story of those 10 days when I was on that ship and we went down from Ushuaia down to the Antarctic Peninsula and back. But in a way, because I wrote it 3 years later, I had time to mature and to digest the trip. And so I squeezed in my soul. So yes, it's in a format of a diary, but there is all the wisdom I could squeeze out of my soul. Until 2011, right? But anyway, so yes, it's like my legacy for the time being, until I write the next one.
I like that word, legacy.
Well, we worked it a couple times.
Charles, you like that, legacy?
Yeah, legacy. That's legacy. That's going to tie into my scenario, or tie into the end once we wrap up here. So to be, I don't know if you had any final questions for Gabriella, or any closing remarks you wanted to throw out there before we get out of here?
Closing remarks is this. I don't know if you noticed this, Gabriella, but when Charles first came on, he had his glasses on. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Whenever, Charles, if you go back and watch all of our Inner Success TV shows, if you ever see him take his glasses off at the end of the interview, he really, really, really gained a lot of value. And all of our viewers definitely know this. So just on a serious note, Gabriella, the information that you shared here with us today, it obviously wasn't something that Charles and I can implement. However, we have so many women viewers that really watch our show, right? And I can only imagine how many of them are going to allow their little girls, right, their baby girls, to actually watch this and get this information. The one thing that I took from this and that I found the most value in was how you were talking about tracking your cycle system. And not just, yeah, you should, sometimes people say you should just track your cycle system. But I believe in this interview, or actually I know in this interview, you really gave them the reasons why it's important for them to track their cycle system. Mm-hmm. So just on behalf of Charles and myself, we just want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be here with us. And the next time Charles and I are in the UK, because that's where you're out of right now, When we're in the UK, we're going to definitely link up with you. But that's all I got, Charles. Back over to you, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Demetrius, for closing us out. And, Gabriella, where can people find you? Website, social media, where can they pick up a copy of your book?
Yeah, they can find all the information about me and also contact me and find links to social media and also find articles, videos, interviews, podcasts, all sorts of stuff on my website, which is flyinginspiration.com, and is flying like flying, F-L-Y-I-N-G, and then inspiration, like having a beautiful inspiration, written in one word, flyinginspiration.com.
Perfect. And we'll, of course, have links to your information in the description once we make the final edits to the video.
Thank you.
Now, as we transition out of here, I have one question for you, Gabriella. What legacy do you want to leave when you depart with your community, with the world, when we hear your name 40 years from now? What's the one thing that people will say that Gabriella represented?
All I want is really just share my wisdom, my knowledge with other women. Because I really believe that women can make such a difference for the planet, for society, for men, and the future generation. And it's undeniable. Women have a bigger part in that. That is, you know, of course, we need men to conceive, but not withdrawing anything from men. I love men. I want to give back to men real women. Good, strong, very powerful, inspiring, nurturing, sweet women. And this is what I call an empowered woman. You know, it's a woman who is simply feeling great in her skin and appreciating her body and allowing herself to be generous herself, you know, representing the feminine energy, which is a very nurturing, you know, it's the energy mainly that gives life. So that's what the impact I want to have. You know, it's a question of help women being aware of the female consciousness and how it operates. And there are some cultures that believe, you know, that the earth is feminine, the divine energy is feminine, whatever. Is it like this or not? I don't know. It's not up to me to establish that. All I want is to make a difference in women's life. And I think there's nothing more beautiful, more delightful than, you know, sharing a life with an empowered woman, or standing next to an empowered woman, or dealing with an empowered woman, because it's a pleasure. You know, it's just you can feel it. It's an energetic thing, and so is the same for men, obviously. But as I happen to be in this lifetime as a woman, female body, so I deal with women, right? So you can do that for men.
Love it. And I agree with you 100% that being around an empowered woman is a blessing. So
yes.
Again, Gabriella, thank you so much for coming on. And take care. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.